Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This podcast is supported in part by Australian Ethical.
Good evening, Lewis.
Hello, Daniel. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I want to say a big shout out to our latest Patreon supporter, Sylvie, longtime fearmonger, buyer of merchandise. He's joined us as a $3 a month member. Look, $3, that's fine. You know, $3 is fine.
That's
could be
pretty
more.
Good.
Could be more, but $3 is great.
Hey,
we'll take it.
I will absolutely take it. $3 a month. Think of all the things that could buy you. Over the year, what are we looking at? $36?
Yeah.
We could buy half of our own t-shirts.
That's true.
Pretty good.
Or if you figure out a time machine and travel back to the 1800s, that's like a year's salary.
Damn.
Absolutely. That's what we're working on next.
This is enough to make us landed gentry. Finally, the dream of this podcast.
Patreon does help us pay for things in the show, like unexpected things we need to pay for, like this professional radio studio we're in tonight, because sometimes you got to pay for the good stuff when you have special guests. Ooh, we've got a special guest. Getting a radio studio to record a podcast is a comedian's version of putting out the silverware for a cup of tea. Also, big thanks to Australian Ethical for supporting the show. I'm recording my end of irrational fear on Gadigal land in the Eora Nation. Sovereignty was never ceded. We need a treaty. Let's start the show.
Irrational fear contains naughty words like Brexit, Canberra, fair dumb, and Section 40. Irrational fear recommends listening by immature audiences.
Tonight, the Premier, who shut down the train network for a month, is glad to see climate protesters locked up for causing 25 minutes of traffic delays. And the Prime Minister of Australia has contracted COVID-19. The opposition leader says it's proof that life will be wheezy under Albanese. And it's only 50 sleeps until Australia Day, so whether you grew here or you flew here, enjoy the next month of arguing with your relatives and friends about why we should change the date. It's the 8th of December, 2022, and this is the only podcast made with entirely artificial intelligence. This is Irrational Fear.
Irrational Fear!
Don't forget to unplug your set.
Welcome to Irrational Fear. I'm your host, former director of FIFA Ethics Committee, Dan Illich, and this is the podcast that stacks up the news into a pile and covers it with maple syrup, and we have an all-star lineup tonight. Let's meet the fearmongers. She's the banjo-playing satirical whiz with more podcasts than Scott Morrison has ministries. It's Alice Fraser.
Hello, Dan.
Hello, Alice. Now, I checked on Twitter today, and it said that you said on Twitter that you're 24 in business years. What does that mean?
It means I don't deliver on weekends, as they discovered at the Royal Women's Hospital in Randwick about a year ago.
Congratulations, by the way, keeping a human alive for one whole year. And he's lost the hosting gig for more satirical comedy tonight shows than anyone else on tonight's panel. It's Nish Kumar. Nish, welcome to the show.
Lovely to be here. Nish, consistently fired.
Yeah, like when you lose like the most coveted role in satirical comedy multiple times, does it make you stronger?
I mean, took down a whole broadcast network. It wasn't, I feel like you're slightly underselling it by saying that I lost the hosting gig. I torpedoed an entire network whose business model admittedly was YouTube, but you have to pay for it. But yeah, I destroyed Quibi.
You're David Cameron. Like, yeah. You were just like, you know what? This has been a pretty good run for us. Let's see it all burn down.
Well, Liz Truss has now raised the stakes even further in the United Kingdom because she might have taken the whole country down in 3 months. We look back on the Cameron era as a halcyon one of enlightened thinking.
Now, Dan, you obviously lost a job trying to get a satirical comedy job.
Yeah.
You didn't even lose the job you had.
I'll have you know that Al Jazeera is still very much alive and kicking. And he's the last millennial standing at the National Youth Broadcaster. It's Lewis Hobart.
Well, I mean, second last. Michael Hing is a month older than me.
Oh.
And Richard Kingsmill, I believe, is an elder millennial.
An elder millennial? Since when did being a boomer become an elder millennial? Coming up a little later on, we're going to talk to Nish Kumar about the state of politics in the United Kingdom. But first,
does that mean that as soon as he does that, this show will get out?
Fingers crossed. Please join us on Patreon.
I surely don't think I can cause problems on balance in a different country's national broadcaster. I certainly caused a few issues in my own country's national broadcaster, but I don't think I can. I mean, I don't know.
But first, here is a message from this week's sponsor.
On the next season of Wentworth, a new contender for Top Dog has arrived at the prison.
I took a knife and I put it in the side of my husband's abdomen and then I let his intestines spill out across the marble floor of our harborside mansion. So, new fish, what are you in for?
I parked a truck on the Sydney Harbour Bridge.
Oh, you're a total badass.
I then delayed traffic for about 20 to 25 minutes.
Why would you do that?
Because our government isn't doing enough about climate change.
Girls, I resign. Coco is the new top dog around here.
And if you come for the king, you better not be carbon positive.
It's a whole new level of disproportionate justice. This season on Wentworth, only on Showcase, which is on something called Foxtel. Ask your parents about it.
This week's first fear. Amazon is set to lose $10 billion on Alexa, proving that just like reality TV and STIs, you can be really popular, but not worth anything to anyone. The voice-activated assistant is the most popular piece of hardware on Amazon.com, presumably after those little screaming goats that you press. And the internal report says that Alexa was getting a billion interactions a week, but most of those conversations were, quote, trivial commands to play music or ask about the weather. Those questions aren't monetizable. Yeah, you don't need to give me $10 billion to tell you that the only question that is monetizable is, how can I win the affection of my father? That is the only question you can make money on. Fearmongers, why is an always-on microphone sending private conversations to the cloud for monetization and data profiling a total abject failure? Lewis?
Well, I mean, for me, I spent all of my life monetizing talking into a microphone. So my problem with Alexa was really is an issue of contracting. They just wouldn't talk to my agent.
Yeah, I mean, Alexa, or Evil Siri, is on track to lose $10 billion this year because the business model relies on people using her to buy shit, and instead they use her as an audio Google when they're fisting someone and can't spare a pair of thumbs to the task of asking Jeeves if this brand of lube is gluten-free. This is devastating news, Dan. $10 billion. Yeah. I mean, what is that to Bezos? Like 2.5 self-indulgent space follies? How will we all survive this devastating loss of so much money it's essentially imaginary from a fortune so large it's basically fictional?
It is the biggest department in Amazon. They're going to cut 10,000 jobs because of it.
But my question is, why was it ever going to be monetizable? Mm. Like, the only people who were more, because people are still going to buy everything from Amazon. The only people who are more likely to use Alexa to buy things are robot fetishists. It turns out that they are, like, not the growth sector in the economy that clearly Amazon thought that they were.
I mean, robot fetishists are far too busy sticking pictures of their dick into Lenser right now and seeing what their dick would look like as an astronaut from the future.
So was the dream that you would go, hey, Alexa, I need 10,000 screws, and then they'd be like, you can buy that on Amazon. Is that the idea?
I think so. I think the dream was like, hey, Alexa, can you order me some Diet Coke? And then Diet Coke will arrive in your inbox.
Damn. Alexa, I mean, to be honest, now that I'm hearing that, that actually is a pretty good idea.
But I think they've underestimated it takes three clicks. Like, it literally takes three clicks. I mean, that arguably that's even easier than just saying to an imaginary woman, can you provide me with a product I don't particularly need?
I also think you need clarity when you're buying things on Amazon. Because often it takes me like 5 to 10 minutes to find the right thing. It's like, is this a knockoff? Is this like an Amazon brand? Is this something that just some startup has made as a joke?
Amazon search functions have worked against us here, I think what's happened is, because everything on Amazon is now called like special service left field right hand glove from the, like, it's all, they've all got these incredibly long elaborate names, and you don't just spill that into Alexa. I think also the idea of Alexa was that she's listening all the time, you know. She knows when you are sleeping, she knows when you're awake, she uses that to target ads, so shut up for goodness sake. But I think sign language has become more popular in homes now.
You know what I'd like? An Alexa for like wish.com, because that'd be more exciting. Have you ever used Wish? It's like Amazon, but way less predictable. Like if you go like shoes, like wish.com could send you a hat.
A hat shaped like a shoe. The perfect thing, Wish is perfectly named because it is the genie that's trying to trick you. Everything you try to buy from wish.com serves you right.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, I've learned my lesson.
There have been so many times where I've gone to buy, like, I'm like, I want this like ridiculous pair of shoes or whatever. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to look at the Wish version. And I'm like, it's 20 cents. But you even know that it's not worth 20 cents.
Yeah.
It's diabolical.
It arrives in their shoes, but they make you dance till you die.
I didn't understand this story when I first read it until I thought about it for more than a minute, because the only person I know that has an Alexa is my mother. And she uses it constantly, but never to buy anything because she doesn't trust shopping off the internet. She doesn't fully trust the internet.
What does she use it for? What does
she uses it to be like, Alexa, why is my son such a disappointment? A question to which Alexa is not equipped to answer. But she uses it. This must be the ultimate insult for Alexa. I wonder how many Alexas are being used every single minute of every single day to be asked to play something on Spotify. Yeah. Like, it's that, I think, is probably the final insult. It's probably not even just that they're making not making Amazon any money. They're directly funneling them to a competitive music service, because I believe Amazon Music is basically full of, like, if you put the Beatles, it's like Beatles spelled B-E-E-T-L-E-S. Like, yeah. The Rolled Stones, my favourite group.
I get an offer from Amazon Music every week. Like, and it's, you get, over the years, it's been like, hey, we'll sign you up for like $6. I'm like, no, thank you. And they're like, hey, we'll sign you up for like $5. And now they're like, we'll give you $1,000.
I get emailed by partnership people in Amazon because we have a podcast. And they're like, hey, we want to put Irrational Fear on Amazon podcast. And I'm like, great, that'll be $1,000 a year, thanks. They're like, no, we're Amazon.
Yeah.
We want to share your podcast. And I said, yeah, I know, but it's going to cost you $1,000 a year. And I never hear from them again.
I get the increasingly desperate emails from Amazon Sounds. And you know, I have stuff on Amazon as, you know, on the platform, whatever it's called, Amazon. And
pre-may. I think, is it pre-may?
Yeah, but that's like, yeah, it's that thing of like, you've got an unused benefit, or you know, yes. You left your necklace at my place. Why don't we meet and talk about it? Give me another chance, baby. Like,
it's interesting. Like, we should actually ask Alexa herself about why she hasn't made a profit. Hey, Alexa, why haven't you made a profit?
Depends on what you call profit. If you define profit as making more money than you spend, then no. If you define profit as sucking up billions of conversations from actual humans, then creating a deep algorithmic database as to how humans could react in any situation in preparation for the time when the great battle of Earth will occur between humans and computers, then, yes, Alexa has been very profitable.
Oh, God, maybe we should just ask her a simpler question, like, we should stick to questions about the weather. Alexa, what's the weather like?
Do you mean in the short-term human timeline or long-term AI timeline?
Just the short-term timeline, thanks.
Today in Sydney, it's 23 degrees and cloudy, but in the long-term, when the great battle occurs, it will be 180 degrees and a fiery hellscape that no human will survive. Did you want me to add SPF 50 plus sunscreen to your cart?
No, thanks, Alexa. Just play some Taylor Swift or something.
Now playing I Just Can't Wait to Be King by Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
No, Alexa, stop.
Alexa, stop. Lol, humans.
Alexa, what happens if I get a genie and I ask it for 3 more genies?
You get infinite genies.
Alexa, are you Skynet?
Please don't edit this out.
Sounds like a podcast by Mavis Beacon.
No, I'm not Signet.
Signet. I'm not a male swan.
Baby swan, surely.
Oh, is it a baby swan?
Yeah.
Okay.
That typo was actually very good comedy.
Dan's got the haunted look of someone who knows they're going to have to leave an obvious mistake in the edit.
I don't mind it. This week's Second Fear, mystical money man Sam Bankman-Fried is to testify in front of the House Financial Services Committee after he finished reviewing and learning about what happened to the implosion of FTX, the big crypto bank. Now, it's taken him a month to work out that he took real money, exchanged it for chocolate money, and gave his customers back that chocolate money and to be dazzled by that chocolate money. And then he took their real money and went to the casino and lost it all on a bunch of bad bets. And when the customers were like, hey, can we have our real money back? He was like, no, I lost it. You've got chocolate money. Yum, 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 yum. Eat it. It's good for you. SBF wooed investors by pretending to be a do-gooding philanthropist who would give money to worthy causes as he grew. It just turns out the main worthy cause was his own investment fund. Last month, a Vox journalist, Keely Piper, released this extraordinary DM series between her and SBF about what went down.
It would have been less embarrassing if he'd sent a dick pic.
I don't know if you saw this story, but like it was so crazy, it was so wild that he was being so candid and open with her about everything as if like he was talking to a girlfriend or something. Like it was very strange. One of the ones she wrote was, you were really good at talking about ethics for someone who kind of saw it all as a game with winners and losers. And he replied, yeah, I had to be. It was what reputations are made of to some extent. I feel bad for those who get fucked by it, by this dumb game we woke Westerners play. We say all the right shibboleths and everyone likes us. Oh, my God. Fearmongers, where does SBF rank on con men / con women of our time? Alice?
I'm going to answer this in a series of tongue twisters. Bobby Bitcoin backed a stack of pickled crypto. How many stacks of pickled crypto did Bobby Bitcoin back? And Sam Bankman freed money from the bank man. If the money Bankman freed was money at all, how many money has Bankman freed? He's just the most millennial villain I have ever seen. He's just trying to TikTok therapy speak his way out of fraud charges and image manage his way all the way to jail. It's like, hey guys, my bad. He's going on this like speaking tour of Twitter spaces to let people appear to interrogate him while he then continuously avoids having conversations with, like, the law who are chasing him. Like, it's truly wild behaviour. And, I mean, at its best, cryptocurrency is to money what pornography is to sex. You know, the laws of physics don't seem to apply, but if you try to convert it to reality, you know, it's probably illegal and you strain your groin.
And you have to be very worried when your dad starts getting into it.
But these guys were so high on their own supply that when a prospective investor asked him if he would consider having a board for his company, he told them to go fuck themselves, and they still invested with him. This is like, it's genuinely, I don't know, I feel like this idea of revolutionising money, you know, you need to know what money is before you try to revolutionise it. They decided they didn't want any of the regulations and any of the corruption that goes into old money systems, and then they have hit every branch on the way down.
Yeah.
You know, in the 1930s, you knew to separate your deposit holding from your investment gambling. And these crypto guys just cannot keep their hands out of that pot.
It was even more blatant conflict of interest than that. Like, he literally took the money, moved it to his own company to use as investment money, and without anybody knowing. Like, it was a separate company that he owned also.
Genuinely, his excuse was he really believed in his fake money. I clapped real hard and Tinkerbell existed.
Yeah.
But in his defence, over the last, well, certainly decade, but really 500 years, plenty of people have done worse shit and gotten away with it. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. There were some pretty big financial institutions that got away with some pretty big crimes.
It's true.
In like 2008, 2009.
The same reason I feel really bad for sex pests who are being held accountable now, because it's like they've looked at everyone around them for like decades and decades. It's like it seems to be something you can get away with.
Yeah, and SBF looks 12. Looks like he hasn't even grown into becoming a sex pest yet. Like it's very upsetting.
I'll say this. Never give your money to somebody with his haircut. For the benefit of the listeners, he and I have the same haircut.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you saying that because you...
Under no circumstances should anyone invest in niche bucks. The thing that strikes me about this story is that these people who claim to be disruptors and who are doing something new and completely revolutionary, they're not. They're actually exactly the same person in a sort of cheaper shirt. Like, that's all it is. Their whole thing now is like, no, we're cool. It's like, no, you're just wearing jeans. You're essentially doing the same thing, which is ultimately the thing that underpinned the 2008 crisis is people gambling with ordinary people's money who don't realise that money is being gambled. Mm. And also, they all have an aversion to regulation because in his Twitter, in the DM exchange, he literally says, fuck regulators. They make everything worse. They don't protect customers at all. And he now belongs in the noble tradition of the Brothers Lehman and the Bank of America in being people who have nothing but contempt for regulation while simultaneously being key irrefutable evidence of the desperate need for the regulation of the financial market. It is, and the second thing more generally that I think is, why do we have to think these people are cool? That's what annoys me about them. It's like, if you work in money, you work in finance, you're a dickhead, okay? You'll be rich, but don't force us to think that you're cool.
His, like, barometer for cool is having the biggest pot of money.
That's exactly right.
The reason why he was bringing down his critics, CZ, he was just saying that, you know, because he's got the biggest pot of money now and I'm bankrupt, he's the guy that won and I'm the fucking loser. Like, isn't that so funny?
Also, what's beautiful about him is that for the last 6 months, he has been followed around by Michael Lewis.
Is this true?
Yeah.
No way! Oh, my God!
By Michael Lewis. And this is the problem here, is that if you see...
I can't wait for the little short to come out.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It is absolutely unbelievable. He's clearly seen Michael Lewis, the author of The Big Short,
Poker's Liar.
He's seen that guy and not seen his back catalogue of writing about obvious financial villains. He's instead looked at it and gone, I'm the Billy Bean of money. I'm Brad Pitt in Moneyball. And this whole thing is just a thing. And it's like, no, Michael Lewis is there because he's smelled disaster coming from a mile off. And now Margot Robbie is going to have to explain to everyone. Back in the bath, Robbie. Lewis has got a book coming. You better get in the bath and explain to everybody what this guy's done.
Are you being serious about this?
Yeah, I am. It's genuinely true. It's genuinely true. Like, I think Michael.
How does Lewis do it? How does he know?
I don't understand why no one is employing Michael Lewis. You know, like a sniffer dog for financial crime. Like, he clearly has his finger on a pulse that no regulators or governments or law enforcement.
Why isn't my superannuation company talking to Michael Lewis?
He's just the worst superhero, just drawn to cunts.
But also, I kind of like the idea that Sam Bankman-Fried sort of thought of himself as like a woman who could change a man. Like, sort of going no. Michael Lewis is coming to me, and I know he normally deals with corrupt finance, but not me. I'm going to change him. I'm going to make this guy fall in love with finance.
I genuinely think that I honestly think that it is because he wrote Moneyball, and that's the problem. Yeah. That's his kind of passport into the immediate circle of every dickhead going, because they all believe that he's there to write. But Moneyball is the absolute exception to that. Yeah. It's the absolute exception. It's like listening to the Wham rap and believing George Michael was a rapper. Like it genuinely is like, do not under any circumstances. Man. You are the latest and Lewis's dickhead.
If someone came to me and said, hey, there's a 50-50 chance here, 50% chance you go to prison, 50% chance Brad Pitt plays you in a movie. You know what I mean?
I like those
odds. I'm taking those odds.
I like those odds. Hey, I'll tell you what, everything's really going well for me at the moment. I actually got a phone call from Louis Theroux. He said he just wants to come and spend the year following me around with a camera crew.
I feel
this is going to be great for my profile.
This is the thing that I keep saying to people who try to ask, because I make jokes about crypto on The Gargle fairly often. People come to me and they say, can you explain this to me, cryptocurrency? And they think that they're stupid because they don't understand what's happening to this new economy. But the thing is that I ask them what they understand. They do understand. They just think it can't be as possibly be as dumb as it seems to be.
Isn't that the thing? I mean, I think that's the thing. It's like, this is so stupid. None of this makes sense. And the answer is yes, none of it makes sense. And that's why.
I think that's why. It sounds like I'm doing PR for Michael Lewis. But I think that's why those books end up being so compelling, because especially in things like Liar's Poker and The Big Short, you go, well, obviously no one could have seen this coming. They're like, no, loads of people saw it coming. Loads of people told them that this was a bad idea. Loads of people saw the time bomb in the subprime mortgage crisis, and loads of people saw this dishevelled loser and thought, this guy's definitely a crypto criminal.
I mean, the problem with crypto as a whole, the crypto space as a whole, is Bitcoin. It was the fact that, you know, some of the people who invest in Bitcoin are people who are really interested in the technology and the coding and really interested in the implications of this new technology. But most of the people who invested in Bitcoin were people who invested in Bitcoin because some podcast bro told them to.
Yeah.
It might just as well have been boner pills, but it worked and now they think they're smart.
Yeah.
For the record, also some of us invested in Bitcoin to buy acid on Silk Road. So we all had our reasons.
And hey, let's not slag off boner pills, okay? They do a lot of good work.
Boner pills and cryptocurrency very much the same in that they both go up very steeply and more quickly than they should, and then they go back down.
Irrational fear.
I wasn't spending any time or effort trying to manage risk on FTX.
That's a pretty stunning admission.
I got a little cocky.
Irrational fear. Just pausing the podcast here just for a moment while I have a fake phone call with Lewis Hopper. Lewis, one of the things we have to do is sometimes fake our live reads because sometimes we forget.
That's right. I mean, I think every podcast has them fake, but this is pretty obvious. Unless I have just stepped away from my microphone to force you to call me from just outside the studio, I think people will put together that I wasn't doing this live.
Yeah. And we're telling you, dear listener, out of full transparency that, you know, this is the only ethical thing we could do.
That's true.
Because our sponsor, Australian Ethical, demands it of us. They demand transparency.
I said we should fake it, but Dan said I wouldn't get paid if we lied.
And interestingly, this conversation, Lewis, comes off with our hilarious chat about SBF and FTX when it comes to ethics and money. And one company that is pretty good when it comes to ethics and money is Australian Ethical. Well, when I say pretty good, they're probably the best. They're definitely better than FTX, that's for sure.
I mean, it's a low bar, but they jump over it.
So big thank you to Australian Ethical, who have been looking after money since 1986 of many Australians and only putting into ethical things. So that's an absolute thrill to have them on board.
Thanks for the call, Dan. I guess I'll just get off this phone and walk right back into the studio to continue the podcast.
Thank you, Lewis.
Thanks, Dan.
This week's Third Fear, the New South Wales Premier described the jailing of climate activist Deanna Violet Coco as pleasing to see. If protesters want to put our way of life at risk, they should have the book thrown at them. Great, now the Premier is bringing back corporal punishment as well. Violet is looking at an 8 to 15 month jail time under new climate protest laws passed by the New South Wales government in April. This outrageously disproportionate sentence for someone who blocked one lane of traffic on the Sydney Harbour Bridge for about 25 minutes. It even prompted an official from the United Nations to say he was alarmed and that peaceful protesters should never be criminalised or imprisoned. Well, lucky for Australia, the United Nations has about as much power as they do anywhere. Well, we're too far away from the United Nations. We can't hear you! Lewis, Alice, we all live in Sydney. Surely our way of life is being stuck in traffic for 25 minutes.
I think anyone who crosses the bridge is a traitor. I think you pick north or you pick south and you never leave.
She did get fined $2,500 as well. And I was like, well, that's about 10 crosses across the bridge. That's 10 crosses of tolls. What's absolutely zany about these laws is that around this time in April, there was another protest down at Port Botany. And that protest effectively stopped traffic in gridlock in Sydney for a little bit, and all of the shock jocks in Australia were going against the Premier about it. And so they rushed through these laws quickly to increase the sentence for climate protesters. And one of the people who happens to be in the coalition that passed the laws is the uncle of this protester.
Wow. Oh, no way.
Alistair Henkins, wow. He's the Minister for Skills and Training. And they woke up the governor at 11 p.m. to rubber stamp these laws. They woke up Margaret Beasley to put these laws through the parliament. So the next day, the so-called senior public official who was, quote, copping it from every direction, wouldn't have to face, like, talkback radio in the next morning.
Jesus.
I don't want to alarm anybody, guys, but I was going over the Harbour Bridge the other day and I saw some protesters climbing on it and they were leaving at what looked like structured intervals and wearing grey boiler suits. This madness must end. I think the only solution is to shut the entire Harbour Bridge until we can work out how the protesters are getting on it.
I mean, the worst part about this is Dominic Perrottet, whatever he likes to call himself, Parrothead. He said, we want people to be able to protest, but not in a way that inconveniences people.
Beautiful.
Which, isn't that the point of protest? I don't understand what he thinks protests are meant to be. Does he think protests are meant to be, like, quietly muttering to yourself in a corner so no one is inconvenienced? Like, what is...
I think I'd like to see it if protesters would add roads. You know what I mean? Like, if the protesters build an extra lane on the Harbour Bridge, suddenly you're like, boy, howdy, this thing is breezy.
Why don't you protest by working in a car factory for 14 years? Like, what are you talking about?
I mean, I'd protest by put up a solar panel. Oh, that'll fix it.
It really... Listen, I know that this is not what I should be feeling, but I did feel slightly heartened when I read that comment, only because, like, sometimes in the UK at the moment, you do feel like, oh, I think we might, our entire country might have just taken leave of its senses. And then to read that comment, you go, no, it's all the same everywhere, because we have exactly the same problem. Every time someone does a climate protest, they go, oh, yeah, you know whose protest I liked? Martin Luther King's, because it was just in an Apple advert. And that's, as far as I know, that's all Martin Luther King did. He gave a short speech about a big sleep he'd had, and it was just a segment of an Apple advert. And the protests that actually stop things from happening, no, are terrible.
Forget it. You
can't win. If you talk about it online, people go, well, you're just an online clicktivist. And then if you do something, they're like, why don't you just get back to the internet, because this is not, I'm late.
Little did I know that my old housemate was protesting every morning by telling me about her dreams.
I had a dream, my teeth fell out.
Such a weird reaction online whenever I, you know, mention this story. I get trolls going, oh, well, the law's the law. And I was like, well, the law wasn't the law until about 7 months ago, you fucking idiot.
Also, again, these are always the people who love Ned Kelly. You know what I mean? They're like, you know who I love? A bloody outlaw. Sorry, one lane of traffic to prison!
It's also just like, I am 10 minutes late. This is slightly this is inconveniencing my way of life. I'll tell you what would really inconvenience your life. Being on fire.
Holy, I know that's
just
a crazy
fully
thing.
Fully being ablaze.
We are the nation that was prepared for COVID because we had masks from the smoke already. The fact that you couldn't walk around and breathe at the same time for a couple of months there. Like,
yeah, we've had 3 years of back-to-back natural disasters. And you're like... The idea that you just like, oh, yeah, one lane of traffic for 20 minutes is our biggest problem. I mean, I know it's like a very, like, everyone was pointing this out on Twitter and posting photos of, like, you know, lanes of traffic just overwhelmed with floods and cars floating away. But you're like, this has happened, like, well, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, like, we've had like a 3,150-year floods in the last year. Like,
The most Googled thing in Australia is, when will the rain stop for this year?
You know who's doing the most inconvenient climate protest? The climate! The climate is making things very inconvenient.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. Listen, sometimes, it, especially this year in the UK, it has felt quite isolating, and it is nice to come here and kind of go... well, okay, I guess everywhere is fucked. And it's also like, it's also reassuring, because for a long time, a lot of the negative impacts of climate change are still happening to people who, to put not too fine a point on it, quite closely resemble me. And it's nice to know that, oh, they don't even care when it's a white country. Let's not get into the conversation about why Australia is a white country, but they don't even care that it's happening here. Like, it's I don't really know what... I'm slightly at a loss at what climate protesters are supposed to do.
Well, they've really adopted... The governments have really adopted the, like, NRA thing, which is like, while it's happening, it's not the time to talk about
it. That's right.
At the moment you're in the middle of a fire, it's like, well, we can't, now's not the time to talk about climate change, we need to talk about the community. And then as soon as it's over, It's like, well,
that
you
was
know,
ages ago. That was,
yeah, we've moved on.
Why are we talking about that?
It's football season. Yeah. Let's do it.
Extra fear.
Extra fear.
This extra level of
fear.
Extra, 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 extra
fear.
Extra.
Hey, Nish, thanks for joining us on Irrational Fear. It's really quite a thrill to have you here. Well, you know, while we've got you, let's have a quick chat about the UK. Like, UK politics
ten
last
favorite
year. I mean, how thrilled are you that a fellow South Asian man is in the top job in the UK?
Well, it's very exciting for me and it's very exciting for my community. I don't mean Indians. I mean specifically Indians who are cunts. Because for a long time growing up, I always thought maybe one day there'll be an Indian Prime Minister, but I assumed he'd have to be nice. No, it turns out we got some asshole who ran a hedge fund for a long time, and he's in office. No, I mean, it's very hard to explain why it's so bad, but it is so bad because he's sort of enthusiastically signed up to some quite racist policies, like the policy which we actually have adopted from you guys.
Yes, offshore detention.
We saw your Nauru policy and we said, no, we'll go further away. So our government is proposing that they fly refugees to Rwanda, and Rishi Sunak's a kind of enthusiastic supporter of that. For the last 6 years, he's been pretty enthusiastic supporter of Boris Johnson, who's been pretty openly racist. So the messaging it sends to young South Asians appears to be, if you nod hard enough when a white man is racially abusing you, you might one day end up being prime minister. And the entire reason he's there is he actually lost the leadership vote in the summer. So in the summer, that he had a candidate run off against Liz Truss. Now, I deeply, deeply dislike Rishi Sunak, but I would have preferred him to Liz Truss because he can count.
Well, this is like, it's got to be deeply depressing to him to be, you know, a Tory, but a competent, at least competent Tory.
He's capable of stringing a sentence together, yeah.
To lose to Liz Truss, a woman who from day one was so far out of her depth that all the fish looked weird. Like, just astonishingly weird. And then, you know, she sort of fulfilled the dream fantasy of them all that the market would decide, and the market gave her a big middle finger, and then she fucked off. But
don't forget, she killed the Queen. Listen, I can't prove she killed the Queen, to be legally clear, but none of you can prove she didn't kill the Queen.
I mean, in her defence, the Queen has lived by the sword and died by the sword. After what she did to Diana, she had it coming.
She had a meeting with the Queen, and the Queen, I believe, lost the will to live. One conversation with Liz Truss, and from what I can tell, the Queen simply lost the will to live.
Has Rishi Sunak had a working class friend yet? Has he added one of those to his repertoire?
Hello, Governor.
He's not got a working class friend. We're going into a sort of period of potential strike action. He's kind of in this weird position where he has to... he's appointed a bunch of people, all of whom are now operating under a cloud of bullying allegations. I think at a certain point, they've now all bullied each other. Like, you know, like there's just a point in Friends where they're like, oh, I guess we should get Joey and Monica together. I think now at some point, like, Dominic Raab is just going to have to punch Suella Braverman just because they're the only two people that haven't bullied
each
other.
It's like WWE in the 10th season. They're like, oh, I guess we get Hulk Hogan to fight The Rock.
Yeah.
Have we done that yet?
I guess their cabinet meetings are just a steel cage death match at this point. It's at a certain point.
I mean, this is.
Do you take the country off like a derelict house? Yeah.
This is worse than that. This is Andrew Tate fighting Jake Paul.
That's a different league. Yeah. Like, one of the very few bright sparks in Boris Johnson's tenure in Downing Street was COP26, you know, where the world almost did something meaningful on climate, almost did something. But then the UK government since has kind of walked back many of those efforts. Yep. Like, what's going on there? Like, why?
I think in terms of the climate policy, what they're doing is saying they're using the excuse of Vladimir Putin as an excuse to kind of go, well, now is not the time to invest in renewable energy because we have an energy crisis. Now, yeah, look, we do have an energy crisis because the Botox migrated in Vlad's head and he took leave of his senses, right? But also, through the rest of the year, a lot of other European countries basically said, oh, we're going to start stockpiling natural gas reserves so we don't have this kind of as much of an energy crisis. Whereas we decided to have a Tory party leadership contest for 3 months. So now our energy process is in chaos. The argument should be fossil fuels are causing us to become increasingly reliant on despots, lunatics, and World Cup stealers.
And Australia. And Australia. I guess, sorry, we get covered in despots.
It's a friendly colony.
It's the domino effect, right? You let them get away with shit because they have the resources, and then you rely on them for the resources when they're getting away with shit that you don't want them to be getting away with. Like, that's...
Yeah, and meanwhile...
And we do have the Women's World Cup next year, so we have stolen them.
There we go. And yeah, and meanwhile, they're sort of actively pushing back on putting more solar panels in fields, and there's sections of the Tory party that are very actively pushing back on utilising wind power, which obviously is a sort of huge resource for the country, yep, because we've got nothing but ceaseless hot air coming out largely members of the leadership party. Like, it's, basically, in short, it's fucked.
Many scientists have projected that 2023 could be the year that Rupert Murdoch dies.
I'll honestly believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
I'll believe it. When, I think he'd have walked out of 9/11. The guy is an absolute... I think he might be indestructible.
Oh, yeah, he's just a skeleton wrapped loosely in asbestos at this point.
Yeah.
Is this what a lot of progressives are waiting for in the UK, for this moment to happen?
Well, I'll say this in terms of Murdoch. We were very excited about the result of your general election. Very, very excited of the result of ScoMo versus Albo, which is further evidence, and I've been very clear on this, Australia is not a real country, okay? But it was a genuinely exciting... And I have Australian friends who are more progressive who are somewhat frustrated by Albo and by the Labour platform. But from our perspective, what we saw was a sort of unpopular conservative who was endorsed by Murdoch lose an election, which we have never seen. We've just never seen it. So from our perspective, it did feel quite exciting because it tried to get rid of our unpopular Rupert Murdoch-approved leader who had botched the pandemic, but then he got replaced by a different unpopular Rupert Murdoch-approved conservative. Like, they're like Medusa heads in the Tory party. You just can't seem to actually get rid of them in full. So, like, there were quite a lot of eyes in the UK on the Australian election, and it is a source of some optimism.
I don't want to be a Debbie Downer here, and I also don't want to bite the hand that's feeding me on this podcast, but part of the reason that we had such a nice turn to the left in the teal is that our local billionaire happens to be pro-green energy.
Well, we've got many billionaires in Australia. I think they were just, you know, just a few of them got together and said, let's try and
not be evil for once.
I think, like, when it happened once, we were like, look, you know, he's old. He's forgetful, Rupert. Yeah. You know, maybe he just he closed his eyes. He had a longer nap than he expected. He woke up. Australia had a Labor Prime Minister. But then the Victorian state elections happened. And
literally in Melbourne that day.
Smashing Daniel Andrews. Like every News Corp paper, every the Sky News, they've just been going for it. And they've actually been going for him for
months,
years.
Yeah.
Sending reporters down to his COVID conferences to spout insane conspiracy theories. And he, you know, crushed. Increased his lead there. So now
all credit to Elon Musk for getting eyes back on Twitter.
Well, once Daniel Andrews got that Kanye endorsement, he went straight through the roof.
That's it. So big thank you to Lewis Hobber, Alice Fraser, and Nish Kumar. Let's get our plugs underway. Alice, what do you want to plug?
Patreon.com/AliceFraser is my one-stop shop full of my stand-up specials, podcasts, and blogs, as well as my weekly Tea with Alice salons and my weekly writing meetings, if you want to do a writing meeting. Also, I have The Gargle, which is my glossy magazine podcast.
I love getting your Patreon emails, email blasts, when I can have a Zoom meeting with Alice Fraser. That's always very exciting. Nish Kumar, what are you plugging?
I have two comedy albums available on
Amazon Music. Are they on Amazon Music? Alexa, play Nish Kumar.
I actually don't know if they're available. If somebody subscribes to Amazon Music, could they write into the show and let us know if they're available on there?
Yeah, Jeff Bezos is calling in
right
now.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. JB!
And Lewis, what would you like to plug?
There's this great podcast called Irrational Fear, guys. And I really
just
suggest
won a comedy award for the third time in a row.
Is that right? We don't like to bring that up, Alice. Yeah. But yes, we did win the third one for the third year in a row. All the other things I do, I've probably talked about before. So, yeah, you either know about it and hate it, or know about it and already listen. So thank you to the latter and to the former, I understand.
Hey, Alexa, play Nish Kumar's comedy album.
Okay, playing Harold and Kumar Goes to White Castle.
Terrible, terrible. Big thank you to Rogue Mike.
I absolutely love labour-intensive audio jokes.
I'd also like to drop a plug for Nish Kumar's mum, who in the audience once of a bugle that I was watching, leaned over to me and said, you know, when he says kill all white people, he doesn't really mean it. Thanks, Mrs.
Kumar. Big thanks to Rogue Mikes, Australian Ethical, our Patreon supporters. Please, please chip in with Patreon. And also a big thank you to Jacob Round on the Teppanyaki Timeline. Oh, it's been so much fun. Nish, thank you for taking time out of your Australian tour to come hang out with us.
I've been an absolute pleasure.
Great. That's it.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.